Bill DeYoung here. It's Arts Alive, the podcast of the St. Pete Catalyst. I am so happy to welcome Duncan McClellan as my guest today. Hello, sir.
Hey, Bill. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. How are you today?
You're doing fine. Just a little warm.
This is, tell me about it. So this is, what is it? 10, 11, 12 years that the studio's been here. The gallery's been here. You've been working, you've been living here. Let's start here. How long has it been? We were talking about this
before. Well, 2009, I bought the building. It was an old tomato packing plant, and it took me a while to convince the owner to sell it to me.
Uh-huh. And but it was abandoned. Why didn't they want to sell it?
Well, it was closed. Well, there was a lot of emotional attachment to the owner, to her husband that passed away. Mm. And so they weren't ready to let go. And it was really Catherine Woods and Mark Ayling that I had met that, you know, I told them what I was looking for. And they said, hey, there's this building not on the market, but maybe you can talk to her.
Well, eventually that worked out.
It took forever.
were there still like canning machines? And was there still
it wasn't that kind of packing. It was gourmet fresh tomatoes that were sold to high-end restaurants and grocery stores all up the East Coast.
But the building was empty.
Right.
Yeah.
And there wasn't much on the property. Matter of fact, there were some illegal businesses going on just before I bought it. It's kind of a statement of what has happened over all these years about how art changed the neighborhood.
Absolutely. It's great that you said that Mark Ayling was there and
Catherine Woods.
And Catherine, yeah, because Catherine, of course, is a glass artist.
Oh, wonderful.
Right? And so they must have seen what you were doing and said, we need this guy here.
Well, it was really interesting because I used to do outdoor shows all over the country.
Yeah.
And in St. Louis, there's a bus station. And
I would imagine there would be, yeah.
And well, it was all of Catherine and Mark's work hanging outside that I just thought was stupendous.
Wow.
And then about a year and a half, 2 years later, I meet him through mutual friends.
Yeah.
And you can see Catherine and Mark's work all over this city.
Yeah.
So it was really nice to get that initial connection with them.
You are, and if you're listening to this, you already know this, but Duncan McClellan is one of the finest, if not the finest, contemporary glass artists in St. Petersburg.
Keep it up, Bill. My head won't fit in the room anymore.
Yeah, his head is filling the room. yeah, you know that already. And if you've seen his work, you know why, because he's an amazing talent, an amazing artist.
Thanks.
And I'm glad to talk with you today about not only how you got here, but your views on what we call the Glass Coast, what we still call the Glass Coast. And I remember you are a pioneer in that. So we're going to talk about the Glass Coast, but I wanted to talk also about your origins. You grew up in Orlando, and you told me a story once that your dad was in advertising and that you had famous people come to dinner at the house.
We've had everything from Walt Disney to Colonel Sanders, and even for the people that are old enough like I am, Mr. Clean, the guy that did the commercial for the bald-headed guy.
He came over wearing like the white T-shirt.
No. But he did have the bald head.
I think maybe it was Yul Brynner, and you were just too young to know. So Walt Disney came to your house to have dinner. We're talking the 60s now when he was...
Yeah, well, it was before Disney 66, so, yeah. Was actually, even talked about, because my dad was hired to keep it quiet that Disney was coming in.
And it finally came out in the Orlando Sentinel, because I did some history work with Disney and the state of Florida, and found out that it was the Orlando Sentinel that broke the story, and then Disney had to give a press conference. And I'm going way off topic here, but what was Colonel Sanders like?
I don't remember him that much.
White suit, goatee, the whole shtick?
No, but he did have that goatee and that go. As much as I remember. You got to realize I was pretty young.
Still, those are great stories. There's stuff to tell the grandchildren, you know. You tried several professions. You were very successful at several things before you found glass. Glass found you. Can you give me a quick rundown on some of the things you did before you became an artist?
Well, we are a combination of everything we've done, any of us. And so, you know, I started selling things very early. Mm-hmm. I was the proverbial guy in the parochial school that had the jacket filled with different things inside my jacket.
Some of them illicit?
No. like cinnamon toothpicks or...
Wow. Oh, you were that kid.
Yeah. Nothing dangerous illegal. Just wristwatches.
You were like Morgan Freeman in the Shawshank Redemption. You could get it. You're that guy.
And then, you know, I... My mom, I had a lot of brothers and sisters, and my mom's feeding us gourmet meals was not the highest priority. Feeding us anything was pretty much a priority. So at age 12, being a fat kid, I wanted to work in restaurants, and I loved it. I loved the pace of it, the bam, bam, bam performance, because that's what a restaurant is. Mm. And I was able, in Oklahoma, I was one of the youngest busboys and slash waiters in the restaurant. And then I started working for later on. My father started doing, after he got out of that type of advertising, he produced some magazines, so I gained some graphic background.
Sure.
And that helped a lot. And then some buddies of mine were starting a cosmetic store, and they needed somebody that knew something about color, and I kind of BS'd my way in and became one of the partners in it.
Where was this?
At the Tampa airport.
Wow.
We had, in total, we had about five different retail stores at one point.
Were you the guy that you put in cologne on women's wrists and saying, you know,
that business is crazy, and it's ridiculous how much it is a license to steal, because what we were paying for it and selling it for was very vastly different. Yeah. And then I used to go to New York to buy for the stores.
Yeah.
And at the time, there was no place in Florida really to blow glass. There were a couple of little furnaces, but I didn't have access. And I found the New York Experimental. Yeah. And so I would take lessons at night. In fact, if any of your listeners have seen the Netflix Blown Away, it's a glass blowing competition.
Yeah.
Well, the one that won the first year was my first teacher. And we represent about five or six of the artists that were on the show.
Why did you walk into the New York Experimental? I want to learn about this. That's what I want to. How did we get from selling cosmetics and being a graphic designer in restaurants to? Well, I want to blow glass. That's cool.
Well, when I was about seven. My father came home one day, and said, to all of us, it was kind of the days where, it's dinner time. Everybody has to be at the table. And, he said, I want you to see the Pietà. And so it was at the New York Fair at the time. And we were in Orlando. Uh-huh. And my dad's idea was to load everybody in the station wagon, an old Valiant station wagon with a tinkle can in the back, because he didn't like to stop.
You anywhere. Had one of those dads.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He would drive there and drive right back. But my mom insisted that we stop at, like, south of the border, if you've ever been to that.
Oh, sure, I remember that. It's still there, I think.
It is.
Yeah, that's right.
Or we would go digging for emeralds. And then they stopped at the Blanco Glass Factory. Mm. And I was fascinated. So I watched the demos. And my parents went through, and then, you know, they started calling my name. It was time to go, and I kept hiding because I wanted to run back and watch more.
Wow.
And that kept up until I started hearing, you know, my first name, my middle name, my last name, and then my number.
Serious.
Because all the kids had a number.
Oh.
Well, unfortunately, we left one of my sisters at a gas station on one trip, and then we didn't realize it until about 100 miles away. So my dad and mom were not too pleased. They had to drive back to the gas station.
How many kids are we talking about here?
We had seven.
Oh, my God.
And then we adopted they adopted a few along the way.
Well, you got your sister from the gas station.
Yeah, we got her back.
Yeah, yeah. glad to hear that.
So we had to go by numbers. I was number three.
Okay, so then many years passed between this revelatory moment.
And glass.
When you're seven, and later on when you're, I'm going to learn how to do this. What is it? I'll just put it this way. What is it about glass to you?
Well, it captured everything that I wanted to do in artwork. Say, when I was 14, I had a line of leather belts, and I sold them in Winter Park to different boutiques. And then later on, I got into clay, and I did a little bit of wood. But it wasn't really satisfying. See, everybody in my family did some kind of artwork, and that was part of the family competition kind of thing. And
number five, it's better than what number three did. Yeah, I can see that.
And so, but glass always captured me. Mm-hmm. And then I started finding out about it. So there was a little furnace in Ybor City. Mm-hmm. Dean James, who's still around, had a little furnace, and I took a few classes, and I said, look, Dean, I'm a very addictive personality, and I really don't want to take a lesson unless I can continue and do more. Oh, no problem. Well, I kept calling him for 2 years and he kept saying, call me in 2 weeks. So I got a little frustrated. And, when I was going on the buying trips, I started, it was before Google. Yeah. So I did the phone book thing, and I found the New York Experimental, which was right next to where John Gotti and everybody else met on Mulberry Street.
Great. So, but I'm trying to give, for me, it's the beauty of this stuff is like impenetrable. It's hard to understand, but there's something about, because it's three-dimensional. Why?
Okay. That's the question. It's the way, first of all, how versatile the material is. And it can be opaque. It can be transparent. It can refract light. It can be almost any shape. It can be, there's so much that can be done with it that, that's what the fascination is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what drove me to do the gallery.
What were your early pieces like?
Oh, it was funny because I'm really blessed. I started before there were many glassblowers at all doing shows. Mm-hmm. And I learned a lot from an artist, Roddy Reed. Do you remember him?
Clay artist.
But I learned a lot about how to present and how to get the newspaper to take a photograph of your work and the crowd. And that put me in the paper quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Because the photographer wanted to shoot that art show with people in it and capture some work. So I never had a tent, and I never had a chair. I always made sure, and we mentor a lot of up-and-coming artists, and that is the main thing I tell them.
No tent, no chair?
No tent, no chair.
So, in other words, we're talking about the art shows that you were doing, which you did for 20-some years, right? So to not have a tent, does that mean that the light's really going to hit this glass stuff? Is that what we're talking about?
Exactly.
You should see his face, folks. His face just lit up. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
In fact, I would position it.
Uh-huh.
And then I'd do a show that would
You are P.T. Barnum, aren't you?
Kind of. I would have... I'd go to a show where they had prize money and prizes, first, second, and third.
Yeah.
But there were only two glass artists. So somebody's going to win prize.
In the glass category, it's either going to be number three or number five, right? So,
and I'm not that good a glass blower. So in the work that I brought back from New York, they all had minor flaws in it.
Mm.
With my background in graphics, I was able to figure out a way to carve out all those minor flaws.
I have a quote from you from the first interview we ever did, okay? This is, I think, 2018, maybe. Duncan McClellan says this, "I blow big bubbles and I carve out my mistakes, and that's what I'm known for."
Yeah.
So that's how the designs came from. There was a flaw in the glass. I'm going to start doing designs.
You got it. Wow. And that's how
You heard it here first, folks.
It goes back to the fact that we're all a combination of what we have done before.
Yeah.
And you build on that. So I built on the ability that I like selling things.
Mm-hmm.
I was taking my sister's toys when I was five and selling them. So I like selling because I get excited. It's not that I'm trying. I really get excited about the potential client getting excited, and I'm building that excitement for them. And
it's all about excitement, in other words.
It is.
That's the key word.
Sorry.
Yeah.
But it's really that
enjoy. Are you a people pleaser? I mean, I don't think P.T. Barnum was a people. I think he was a Barnum.
I don't have many HR skills. Just ask anybody that's ever worked with me. But I am a people pleaser and to a certain extent.
When did you know at some point, I mean, you're making money, you're selling pieces that, you've carved out the flaws. When did you know that you were good at it?
I'll let you know. Honestly, and that's not, I'm not being facetious. I think, if an artist doesn't believe that the best pieces are in front of them, I mean, if you're asking good, am I adequate? Can I hold up? I would hope so.
Mm-hmm.
But I will tell you the reason I got into the gallery business was because I was so excited about the whole reason I got into glass. I was so excited about what other people were doing.
Yeah.
And I wanted to know how does that get done? And I wanted to be able to do it. And then I got lucky that I could keep something on the end of a pipe and somebody thought it was art.
That's interesting.
Humility,
that's something else, man. Not really, that's something else. We know when you came to St. Petersburg, but why?
Well, when I was first in Tampa, when they brought the interstate in, there were a number of historical houses that the federal government has to pay for moving, and then they move them to another location, and they have to pay for rehabbing and bringing that up to code.
Okay.
Several cities, what they did is they moved them, and they sold them to artists before they were rehabbed. And then they were rehabbed, then they go to the bank, then they refinanced, and then they had cash to start up.
Mm.
And there was a space right in North Ybor that was very dangerous. It was a dangerous area.
Yeah.
And that's the area I wanted to do. And Mayor Iorio, I had a meeting with her, and I told her what I wanted to do. But for 2 years, I was told by the attorneys for the city, There's no way we can do that. Mm. And I said, yes, there is. Other cities have done it. And Paul Wilburn was the art czar at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I dogged poor Paul. He's such a great guy.
Are you listening, Paul?
Why he's a friend of mine to this day, because I was giving him a hard time of why can't we get this done?
Yeah.
And then I was at a charity event. We've always donated to different pieces, to different charities. And I'm there, and it was some kind of animal charity. And I'm seeing how people in St. Pete interact. St. Pete is very different than any other city. You know, you can go to a bar in this town and you can be talking to a 20-year-old and an 80-year-old over here. And the conversation is, it's amazing that we don't have this breakup. But so I'm at this charity and I'm talking out loud, and there was a guy next to me, and I said, boy, I wish I lived here. And he goes, you mean it? And I went, yeah. It was Herb Polson, who was a city council person at the time.
Right.
And he put me in touch with the mayor's office, which was Bill Foster. I think it was the tail end of Rick Baker, and then Foster. I think that's the way it works.
Sounds about right.
He was very accommodating. I mean, they didn't give me anything, but they helped. I mean, I remember when we had in our area light rain, and literally it would be halfway up the door of a car.
Yeah.
In seconds.
Sure.
So there was a duck swimming down the middle of the, after I bought the place, a duck swimming down the middle of the street. So I took a camera, shot it, and I sent it to the mayor's office. And I didn't write anything except help. And what really surprised me, I got a call. I called them about 3 weeks later, and yes, we got your message. And then another 2 weeks, I got a we're working on it. And I went, they're not going to do anything. And 2 weeks later, I get a call asking me, do you need gas there? Yeah, I need gas there. And he said, well, your plans don't. I wasn't planning on the hot shop next door at this point.
Right.
And he said, well, your plans don't call for gas. Well, we put in gas heaters. We put in anything gas we could because they were going to cut off the gas line at Central. And I'd have to pay for gas to come all the way down to Fifth South.
Oh, yeah.
So they were very accommodating. They took care of the drainage problem. Contractor they selected was incredible. They were very accommodating. You remember Chef Tom?
No, I was gone for many years.
Chef was a very loved figure here, and he was part of everything that started out well there.
So it must be nice to feel like this city, and I've said this, the director of Pride was in here a month or so ago, and I said it must be nice to know that the city, in whatever way it can, has got your back, supports you, you know, and you didn't feel that in Hillsborough County.
No, I didn't. I really didn't. Sad to say, although there are some people over there that, you know, during that time frame, it was Linda Salcina. But there's some good city council people over there.
Well, things do change. Duncan McClellan Gallery is part of, we were talking before, there were essentially three parts to what you have right now. There's the gallery where you have works by lots of different artists, not only yours, correct?
Right.
Okay. I mean, it would be nice if it was just yours. And yours is in the Imagine Museum and in all sorts of private collections and other places, too. Talk to me about the DMG school project, which is something that you founded on the site there.
Okay, well, let me explain the gallery first, and then we'll go, if I could. The gallery is 125 internationally known artists.
Yeah.
And a lot of them come out of our DMG School Project, as well as internationally recognized artists.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I had always done when I was doing shows, if there were new artists, I learned from, like I mentioned, Roddy Reed.
Yeah.
And so mentoring new artists is part of what we do. And then school teachers would ask me to do a program for kids, and all of a sudden I'm doing basically the beginnings of what we do at DMG School Project.
Mm-hmm.
And then for about 5 years, we funded it. My wife volunteered. We have a few volunteers that would help us. And we started doing etching classes for kids. We started doing programming of mentoring artists. We started doing residencies. So I'd let them use my equipment. And I funded it as far as I could.
Yeah.
And people that have been very kind to me and good customers of mine kept saying, we want to help you, but we want to make a donation, but we need a tax deduction. Get a 501c3.
Right.
So we became a 501c3, and this allowed people to help us as well, which really allowed us to expand and expand our services. So right now we do programming with like a Florida Craft Art. We sponsor the emerging artists in part there. We do our demonstrations with our mobile units there. We have a mentoring session. We also do the same thing at Gasparilla. And our artists have really excelled. One of our artists from Gasparilla became two years after that show was on the front cover of Time magazine.
There you go.
And Nika Jones does an incredible job, wonderful artist. And so a lot of our artists that have come out of that program have excelled. And then when I bought the building next door, and Jake Stout, a person I've known for many years in different galleries, as well as an excellent equipment builder,
mm-hmm.
I hired him to build. I bought the building. We built the shop next door. And for a few years at that time was my studio manager. And so that allowed us to bring in other artists. You know, the first second Saturday I ever did, it was all my work. And then I realized, what am I going to do for next second Saturday? So we started bringing in other artists. And Stefan Pond, who we just did a large residency this past spring. And show for him. He was one artist, and then we started getting more artists, and then we'd have him come in to demonstrate, because the public, just like you said, what is it that about glass?
Yeah.
How does it get made?
People like to just watch it. It's like, it's not like the sausage. You want to see it getting made.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
So that's what, and that's just part of what we do. We have, as I mentioned, mobile units. We have one sandblast mobile unit. We have another hot glass mobile unit.
Mm-hmm.
And we send that out to schools. We can teach 200 kids in a day. But we're not teaching them how to blow glass. We're teaching them how, you know, you get the attention with the hot flame.
Yeah.
But you're telling them how an artist uses chemistry, how an artist uses geometry, physics, how an artist uses algebra. Because the second asked question when we bring kids in, we love bringing in the kids, and we have a great time with them. So we're able to do those kind of things. But with the mobile unit, they ask if you get burned. Yes. And they ask, why does this cost so much money? And so you show them the algebra of how an artist figures out. That is the second most asked question. Well, I will tell you the glass medium is probably the most expensive medium to work in because I don't know of another medium that you get all the happened to me a couple of weeks ago. Got finished on a piece that I blew probably 10 years ago, maybe even longer. Carved it. Last step, broke it.
Once it's gone, it's gone, right?
Yeah, well, even a minor flaw in glass devalues the whole thing. You know, so it's not like some other mediums where it can be covered or changed and it doesn't matter. Glass, it matters.
It's, what's down the road for you?
Well, I'm looking to expand my place. And quite honestly, with the existing zoning that we have, and we want to keep that, it's a, we're an industrial zoning. As you know, St. Pete has grown, and the industry has grown. It's not smokestack. It's creative businesses. It's so we need that industrial zone, but we need to be able to grow. We need to be able to have residential. We need a higher density here so that we can bring in the people to help make all of this work. You know, glass is a very collaborative thing, and so you need a lot of people hands on deck.
So what does that look like for you, expansion?
I think it allows me to have residencies on the property. I think it allows me to have other uses that I want to keep the uses we have, but I want to be able to expand to be able to take this to the next level. At this point, with the current zoning, I'm doing everything I can do. But I have so many more ideas. I can't wait to tell you where they are in the works. And you will be the first to know.
Yeah, I can see it in your eyes. There's a little glimmer in his eyes. So we'll leave it there for now. And pick up when we got more to talk about. We'll do this again.
That'll
Duncan McClellan, always a pleasure.
And thank you, sir.